It's not just that Bob is brilliant. It also helps that everyone else isn't as smart. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hour number three of Primetime Sports for this Thursday, the 23rd of June. Bob McCowan, Arash Madani in our Toronto studios. Well, I'm done. I've had enough.
I tell you what, you're not impressed by much. That's as good as it gets.
No, I've had enough. No, I got nothing else to say. I mean, we have fine guests coming up this hour, and I will pay them due respect, but...
The great Jim Brown.
I'm good for another 20 years now. Would have been nice if he remembered, you know, the time we spent together, because we spent almost an entire day together. You know, he came in.
A quarter century ago, to be fair.
Well, I was doing the morning show at the time, and if I remember correctly, JB came in from 9 to 10, which was the last hour of the show. Morning show now only goes till 9. Those wimps can't do, you know, the full whack. But we used to do 6 a.m. to 10, and JB came in from 9 to 10, and then I was finished, and I knew he played golf, and I was going to go to the golf club. And I said, what are you doing now? And he said, well, you know, I'm in town for the day, and I leave tomorrow. And I said, have you got anything on the agenda for the day? And he said, no. And I said, you want to play golf? And to my surprise, he said, yes. And we drove up to my golf club, and the two of us went out, just the two of us, and spent the next 4 or 5 hours on the golf course and just chatted, if you will, about a whole variety of things. A lot about the Cleveland meeting and a lot about, you know, race relations and things like that. And I honestly can't remember all the specifics of it, but it's been a long time. And thank you to the staff here for arranging that conversation. And to Joey Vendetta as well. And I will chastise him later on. Thank God the Arizonas are gone, is all I could say. And usually you say that if they've beaten up the Blue Jays or whatever, but I just couldn't look at those uniforms anymore. Those are the worst uniforms in the history of all uniforms. I mean, there have been some bad uniforms. Like the Vancouver Canucks have had some bad uniforms. There are other teams out there that have uniforms that I'm not fans of, but those Arizona uniforms are dreadful. And I blame our next guest, Cliff Floyd, to a great extent. I have no idea, Floyd, what contribution or blame is appropriate for you on this, but in the need to reach out and blame somebody for those uniforms, I'm choosing you because you are on now. Are those the most horrific uniforms you've ever seen in all of sport?
Yeah, they're trying their best right now to try to wear different color shoes and all these things, but you know, wear baggier pants so you don't see you don't see some of the stuff on the leg pants. But I would say right up there is one of the worst uniforms I've seen in a long freaking time.
Well, give me a comparative. Do you have any other uniforms that we could compare to these in terms for being bad?
The old school Montreal Expos unis were right up there.
How about the old school Houston Astros unis?
That's pretty close.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm a big orange guy, so I didn't really look at those.
Okay.
It was just dreadful. I guess they're trying to keep fans away from the ballpark, and so that's probably what the agenda is there. My eyeballs concede to them. I had to turn the game off. I couldn't watch those uniforms anymore. Blue Jays do get three home runs again to get the split with the Diamondbacks yesterday. They only get 5 hits, but score 5 runs. And it's just a little thing, Cliff, but it is sort of, this is the kind of team that we saw a lot last year. A team that would go out and get 10 or 11 or 12 runs one day and usually do it with 10 or 11 or 12 hits. And then the next day they'd come back and they'd get shut out. And then the next day they'd score five runs on five hits. All of this stuff looks very familiar to me. I don't know how closely you paid attention to the Blue Jays last year, but do you see the same kinds of things evolving with this team that evolved last year?
Yeah, it's starting to come. You know, the unfortunate thing is you don't have Joey Batson there, excuse me, you know, consistently with the injury, but this lineup is exactly what, you know, every team wished they could have. When you talk about, yeah, you might be one-dimensional. They're only one-dimensional when they're, you know, doing what we saw in April. Early on in the season, they were struggling, you know, and that's when they're one-dimensional, right? And if you're going to be a team with no speed, then you better always be in a position where you can get, you know, a 3-run homer here and there. And Michael Saunders has been great. But yeah, you know, to your point, absolutely. This is a lineup that shocked me when, you know, they didn't score runs and shocked me when things were looking like maybe the pressure, you know, finally setting in that, you know, with Joey and Eddie, is the fact that, you know, they're probably not going to be a part of that team moving forward, and they feel the pressure about them trying to put up a great year. So, you know, sometimes it is too early and premature, especially when you have a lineup like theirs. But when it starts to click and you get Tulo back in that lineup and he's doing what he's doing of late, it could get scary. It could get scary in the next 15, 20 games.
Well, there's no let-up, and that's really the issue. There's no time to rest because – top to bottom, that lineup can beat you from a whole bunch of different ways. We know it's mostly the power and mostly the front of the end of the lineup. Let me ask you about Jose Bautista, who's obviously on the DL. Everybody in Toronto recognizes the contribution that he has made to this team over the last many years. He will be remembered no matter what happens as one of the great players ever to come through this city. And yet, with his contractual situation, with the trade deadline about 6 weeks away, there is almost increasing speculation that he may be a guy who the Blue Jays would be willing to move or may feel like they have to move. What do you think of that? Do you think that's possible, probable, likely, any of those?
I think it boils down to, you know, what percentage they believe they have an opportunity to sign him moving forward. And if they believe that he's not going to take a lesser than 5-year deal, which he's put out there,
yes,
then you have to at least entertain, you know, the idea of trading him.
What if you're in the hunt, Cliff?
If you're in the hunt, see, the thing with being in the hunt is I do not want to waste my window of opportunity. You and I have had this conversation before. It's a small one, right? It's a small window.
Oh, yes, it is.
And, you know, and if you don't go all in, you know, and it's only your fault. And the fans do understand and see those things. They understand that, hey, you're not really serious about winning, as we see. We're not going to waste our money. But when the fans see you going all in, then they're on board for years to come. See, this is, for me, the tough situation that they have, you know, to deal with, because if you don't believe you can sign either one of them, at what point do you say, you know, okay, let's dang them out there and see if we can get a hell of a lot for them in return?
Yeah.
That's what I do, because you have guys like Michael Saunders, who I think can keep it up if he stays healthy. I did a breakdown on him yesterday, and my thought was he gave up something that was so good for him to be able to stay on the field and be productive from an offensive standpoint. He gave up stealing bases. You know, Michael Saunders stole bags back in the day.
Yeah.
But, you know, now he's a power guy. He's on the field. He's doing what you need to do. If Michael Saunders can continue this, then you can afford to lose a guy like Joey Bats. And I can't believe I'm saying this. But if you want to upgrade your pitching or upgrade some other area, this is the opportune time. If you think he's not going to come back, you can get that type of player that can help you and propel you to an opportunity to get to that postseason.
I don't disagree with a word you've said, Cliff, but you've touched on the issue for me, and that is this. And it does start with the notion that you have to be of the mindset that you're not going to be able to come to terms with Jose Bautista and therefore are going to lose him at the end of the year. And then now you start to look at what where is this team going to be in August? They have two young pitchers that we believe are on a short leash in terms of innings pitched. Both of them starters in Stroman and Sanchez. One who they are projecting right now will go back to the bullpen at least for some period of time. And the other, I haven't heard anything about. That
except
being Sanchez.
The other, well, but Stroman is struggling here.
Or Stroman, that's what
I
meant.
This is becoming a bit of an issue.
Well, that's why I raised this because you are it looks like you may have pitching issues come August. Can you get for Joey Batts, in theory, a pitcher that can help you in that area? Because to do it for a trade for futures makes zero sense to me.
There's I disagree.
Got to be immediate help.
No, but the futures you can then flip for something.
Well, I think you need immediate help.
I think you need immediate that you hope gives you long term. Now, if you can't find that, happy world, of course that you want. But
sure.
You know, I think you also have to look at certain teams and how they're situated as well, right? Like if you look at the Cleveland Indians, like right now, if both GMs got together and said, look, we don't have, you know, Cleveland, we don't have Michael Brantley in our lineup. We need a big bat. On the flip, you talk about Aaron Sanchez at some point going down to the pen. Gibby's already put it out there. Stroh is struggling a little bit. You know, you know that Dickey's going to be around a 500 pitcher. And I can go on down the list.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they have an absolute slew of pitchers when you look at Cleveland. And I think they would be, crazy to not want to at least entertain having a guy like Joey Batts until Michael Brantley is back doing his thing in the middle of that lineup moving forward. Now, it might be short-term for them, but when the next time, you know, Cleveland's going to be in this situation, you hate giving up pitching depth, but, would you not take a flyer on Trevor Bauer right now in the Blue Jays uniform?
Sure.
I love the stuff he's featuring. He's finally figured it out.
Yeah.
You want to get a guy on your team that's at the point where you don't have to think about, you know, him taking two steps backwards. What he did last night is what I believe Trevor Bauer is going to do consistently because he's figured out how to attack the strike zone and not do stupid things and make stupid mistakes. So that's the type of conversation I'm looking at. If I'm a GM, like, do I need a guy like Trevor Bauer? Am I willing to give up, you know, Joey Batts? And I want more than, of course, if you're Jays, you get more than Trevor Bauer, but he is a part of that package.
Cliff, are you concerned on where Marcus Stroman is now and where he is trending right now?
You know, you have to be concerned. The last start, a few things happened and you know, the umpire got hit and it took about more than 20 minutes to get him back, you know, back on.
Right. In Baltimore Sunday.
Yeah. You know, and I look at the mistakes that he's making. You know, he's in the middle of the plate a little bit more than I've ever seen Stroh. And he's gotten away with it. See, the problem with what's going on now is when you say, you know, Strowman's struggling, he hasn't dealt with this before a whole bunch. So you have to allow some young pitchers like himself to be able to get beat up a little bit, figure it out on the fly, which I think he will be able to. I had a conversation last week with Aaron Sanchez, his boy, and he was like, look, you know, Stroh goes to the drawing board, you know, more than anybody. He's working at things. He's watching film. He's trying to get back, so I'm not worried about him. I believe that. Some people, you know, use that as, you know, some people look at that and be like, that's eyewash. What else he's going to say? But, you know, just listen to Sanchez, and then you look at his mannerism talking about Stroh. You know, you can tell that he's wearing it, and maybe he is trying too hard to make that perfect pitch as opposed to being the nasty guy we've seen from him in the past.
Do you think there's more to it than location? Do you think his stuff has lost something or guys have figured them out? Most of his starts, and I see I see pitches down the middle of the plate instead of on the edges of the plate. I see pitches from the belt line up instead of from the belt line down. But maybe it's none of that, and maybe it's movement or deception. Have you been able to ascertain what he needs to be working on?
Yeah, you know, one thing I always look at with pitchers is, and not knowing so much, but learning so much after the game, you know, to, you know, what makes a pitcher's stuff flat or whatever the case may be. He don't look flat. He looks like they figured him out in count situations, meaning he's getting behind in certain situations. If I know if with technology today, I know exactly what a guy going to throw with his tendencies in certain counts, right?
Yeah, so sure.
If you're going to do that and you actually become, you know, a guy that I could look at and go, well, he's that same guy, and it's your go-to pitch in certain situations, that pattern is going to get you in trouble. And once you start, you know, and I think that's the one thing he has to do differently. And then if you listen to the great Greg Maddux talk, he'll go, look, I never pitch the middle of the order the same way for four at-bats. I thought that was so interesting.
It really is.
Because if you pitch the middle of the order the same way, they're going to crush you at some point when you get behind in a count, per se. So Stroll's been a behind in counts in situations where you have to maybe, instead of pitching backwards, he trusts in his fastball. Sometimes you have to pitch backwards 0-0 and throw him for a loop. First pitch curveball, first pitch changeup. Get these guys off, you know, off their fastball and off their good stuff to allow everything else to just fall into place.
Well, and the relevance of talking about Maddux is that if anybody who watched him pitch understood, he had spectacular stuff and spectacular location, but he would not overpower you. He did not have that ability to just rear back, throw that fastball, and freeze you. So he had to think. And there was probably not a pitcher in my lifetime that was a better thinker, I don't think, than he.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, you know what? Facing him being a National League East lifer, you know, like myself, you know, it made me better. It made me better to come to the ballpark. And everybody goes, you crazy? No, I would rather face him so when I face some of these other cats along the way, nothing bothered me. I knew Greg Maddux was going to throw me, you know, fastballs down the middle. I knew he wasn't going to make mistakes often. So I focused more on what I want to do. And to see, with Stroll being so good and he has all these antics out there on the mound, I think it works against him at points. You know,
interesting.
He's really involved. He's really highly emotional out there. And, you know, hitters feed to that. I mean, if I was facing Strowman, it's just me, I would really buy into that at bat every time, because once I got a chance to get him, it would make me feel that much better because of the simple fact that he's so animated out there on the mound. Nothing against him. I love the energy, but sometimes it works against him.
Fascinating stuff. We always enjoy having you on. Thanks, pal. We'll talk to you again soon, I hope.
All right, buddy, for sure.
See ya. Cliff Floyd of the MLB Network. Well, they're going to have to figure something out. I mean, as we sit here and talk about Sanchez specifically and a limit on his innings, you have to assume there'll be some kind of limit on Stroman, and that means you're,
but here's
at least
what I disagree
theoretically,
with you.
Two starters short by the time you get to September,
but here's
maybe
where
before.
Here's where I disagree with you. If you're in contention, if you're in the hunt, if you're in the race, I don't care if he has an expiring contract. I don't care if he's walking out the door on November 1st. Jose Bautista has to be a part of this.
I don't disagree with that, Arash, but what I'm saying to you is, and understand, at no point did I say the Blue Jays need bullpen help. They should trade Jose Bautista for a stud setup guy.
Mm-hmm.
No, that is not really what you need. You have a situation here that is unclear to most fans.
But here's what, Bob.
And you have one pitcher in the minor leagues that has any tangible major league experience, and a lot of people don't think he's good enough to pitch in the major leagues anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably are going to need two. And if you have an injury, God forbid, now what are you going to do?
But the whole thing is, it's the window. The window shuts after this year. Roll Sanchez.
But you got to get to that window. Well,
Roll Sanchez.
You know I feel that way.
Sure.
You know, I don't believe in innings limitations, but the Blue Jays continue to say that Sanchez will be shut down around 160 innings, and they haven't said anything about Stroman, but you have to assume he's probably got 180 inning limit.
Or less. Two more bad starts the way he's going. Maybe you do call Hutch up. Listen, you want to remove
Ricky Romero flashbacks.
You want to remove the issue of finding two starters turn it into just one?
I know.
Roll Sanchez. Keep Bautista. Jose Bautista has to be part of this in September and October. I know where you're coming from.
They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it. It's no point arguing about it. We'll move on. Let's move along. Yeah. The NHL draft is... Okay, when is the draft? NHL draft tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Okay. This is the third time now I've asked in this show. My memory is good, but it's extremely short. And the Toronto Maple Leafs hold the first selection overall, and everybody presumes they know who the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to take, but what are the chances they look at this thing and say, somebody has offered us something that gives us youth and immediate help, and what we're risking is an unknown commodity in Auston Matthews.
Mm-hmm.
Unknown commodity at the NHL level. We understand he's the best player out there, but we also understand that not all draft choices are successful. Brian Lawton is a former general manager and now with the NHL Network and joins us on the phone. Mr. Lawton, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bob. How are you?
Good, pal. Long time no see. How's everything been okay?
Everything's great. You just interrupted my draft floor picture welcoming
a lot
of Canadian teams to the front row this year.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, no kidding. That's what happens when all of them finish out of the playoffs. Y'all get moved to the front of the line, and at the front of the front are the Toronto Maple Leafs. Give me your take on the chances, based on your experience and expectations, that the Maple Leafs don't take Auston Matthews.
Boy, I really think Patrick Laine has played terrific and has made a hard run at being considered right there with Auston Matthews, but I think it's 0%, Bob.
Okay. Compared to Laine, I get that. What if some team steps up and says, here is a package of young players? I mean, there's been speculation about Arizona, but whether it's true or not, who knows? Team says, here's a package of young players already at the NHL level, already proving themselves at the NHL level. Do you even sniff at it, or do you just reject the notion of giving up a number one pick because, unless you're the Edmonton Oilers, you don't get one every year?
Well, Arizona I've talked to extensively, and I can shut that one down 100%. They're not going to trade Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who the Leafs would want. So that's a zero. And I really, truly think the Leafs are committed to going the route they said that they're going to. And you may see them speed it up in any areas, but as far as this pick, as far as where they're at today, there's no way they're trading that pick.
If he wasn't a center, would it change your opinion?
Yes, it would.
Interesting.
But he is a center.
No, I get it. I get it, but I mean, we do focus a lot on centers and their importance and the difficulty, it seems, of NHL teams at this point, and I guess it's cyclical, but right now, there are not a whole lot of high-profile quality centers certainly available and maybe needed, not even in existence right now. Makes him more valuable, doesn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely does. It does. It fits with everything that they've been trying to accomplish, though. And Auston Matthews, having spent a year in Switzerland, I think that gives everybody a higher comfort level. I've been that player that we're talking about and really didn't do well, right, for what the expectations were. But this is a different story with Auston Matthews. This is as proven as you can be without playing in the league, in my opinion.
Well,
makes it a certainty.
Yeah, Brian, the Auston Matthews situation, look, the kid's going to get drafted. There's no question there. But what's really becoming interesting tonight is the PK Subban situation. More and more the conversation is up that Marc Bergevin has him available for trade, has him available for offers. Bergevin is late to his own press conference. He still hasn't showed up to his media availability in Buffalo. Our Nick Kiprios reporting now that he's hearing Bergevin's price remains too high in his bid to trade PK Subban. Do you believe PK remains a Montreal Canadian at the start of next season?
I believe that a team like the Edmonton Oilers is going to make a really attractive offer to a group of management folks for whatever reason don't see the same value that I see in PK Subban or yourselves or other people that are big fans of PK Subban like I am. I do think that it is a much stronger possibility today than I would have ever imagined. I just think as much as we're talking about centermen and young players like Austin Matthews, PK Subban is a top, for me, he's certainly a top seven defenseman in the National Hockey League and really a top five. He has that type of ability, but for whatever reason, the current management group does not appear to share that sentiment. And it's a little bit boggling to me.
It was a couple of years ago, Brian, that it appeared as if the Habs and Subban were going to arbitration, that Bergevin and Don Meehan were very far apart on a contract extension. And it seemed like from afar that it was Jeffrey Molson who stepped in and said, no, let's get this done. Let's get this finished. And immediately a contract was handed Subban's way. If Subban is now up for grabs, if he can be dealt, that would mean that ownership has signed off on this, wouldn't it?
It absolutely would. And the pain that that organization went through this year in the start that they had, and then, of course, the troubles that they had starting in early December, and then really the complete meltdown is something that could have obviously changed ownership's opinion. I don't think it's that. I think the Montreal Canadiens losing Carey Price have a lot of work to do with their team. I think that Carey has hidden a lot of problems for them in the past. I think PK Subban does exactly what you would want for him, but maybe at times last year when things got out of control for their group, he put himself in a bad position at times, trying to really break the cardinal rule in sports, which is you got to trust your teammates to do their job. But when the job's not getting done, people start to do extra. You can look really bad in this league fast. And I do think some of that happened to PK last season.
You made an interesting point there, and I think it's one that we can all relate to, and that is the significance and the importance of Carey Price to the Montreal Canadiens. We talked about the NHL Awards a year ago in Las Vegas, and I was there for that, and it was the Carey Price show. It was one after another, after another, after another. And the Montreal Canadiens had become a competitive hockey team. I don't know about a Stanley Cup team, but a competitive hockey team when he was playing and in form and were the same at the beginning of this year. His departure either exposed the Montreal Canadiens for the kind of team they showed themselves to be over the last 60 games or so, or it created a collapse in a team that didn't know how to recover, or maybe a coaching staff who didn't know how to bring them back to life. Is there a danger in your mind in shopping PK Subban right now and kind of making him the scapegoat for the problems that existed in Montreal?
I think there is. I haven't seen that resounding, absolutely not going to trade this player type of comments that sometimes we see in other situations, Bob.
Right.
And your question is, does that play out if in fact he isn't moved? And hey, let's face it, it is tough to move a player of this magnitude for a number of reasons. Number one, you want to make sure you get back an unbelievable return. Number two, you've got a whole fan base to deal with. And number three, you have salary preclusion.
You sure do with his contract.
Salary cap world.
Yeah, man.
Like everybody could be a bidder. So it is a tough, tough deal. So that means there is a strong possibility that he will still be there. And then you have to pick up the pieces from this. And I think that it will absolutely leave the Canadians in a worse position than they were if they just did nothing and it was stomped out. Mm. So my conclusion is that they are serious about potentially moving him.
Sure seems that way.
And now, and then you get to the other part of the equation, and maybe it's irrelevant, but so I know PK a little bit. I've spent a little bit of time with him in studio and outside the studio. And I don't know how to read him necessarily on this subject, but I think he's a guy with some pride. I think he's a guy who wants the Montreal Canadian organization to appreciate what he brings to them, not just in terms of his performance, but his compassion, his enthusiasm, the things he's done off the ice, the things he's done in the community. And if they don't trade him, I wonder how he feels about going back to camp there in August or September. I wonder if he feels differently about the organization simply because they've shopped him. Or can you, Brian, be a complete professional about it and shrug your shoulders and say, oh, well, it's part of the deal? Can you do that?
I do think that PK is very professional, and I do think he'll be able to do it. But I still think you lose a part of yourself when that happens to you.
Sure you do. I think so.
For that first team. Particularly, you know, once you get a few times, if you do, like a person like myself, then you lose some of those spots. But the first team is, it's like your first love in life.
Yeah.
It's traumatic.
Let's remember this. Yeah. Not to, sports are different, but fundamentally, talking about an athlete, Michael Saunders was traded at spring training for Jay Bruce. If not for a failed physical of a prospect, Michael Saunders isn't a Blue Jay. Look how he's responded since.
That's right. And it's not to say you can't, and I'm saying that PK Subban will respond as positively as you can, but deep down in his heart, where we'll never really truly know the answer, I'm telling you it'll be a part of him that it bugs him. And it should.
Yeah, and I think the situations are different because Saunders was projected as not a key piece of the puzzle, just a guy. He's proved to be more than that, but just a guy. We're talking about, you know, a cornerstone piece for the Montreal Canadiens here, who has cachet both on the ice and in the community.
Mm-hmm.
I want to spend a couple of minutes real quickly here. I know it's a while, but you spent time with Steven Stamkos during your tenure in Tampa. And, of course, there's great debate about where he lands. Will he go back to Tampa? Where might he want to play if the free agent door swings wide open? Do you have any feel or sense as to this guy and what he wants?
I have always believed that Steven is a big-time player that would love to play in one of the biggest stages in the world. And personally, I've always believed that there would be a strong attraction to play for the Toronto Maple Leafs because of that, having known Steven long before, certainly he was a superstar in the NHL and spent some time with him. He's just, some guys hate that. Vinny LeCavier hated that concept. Steven Stamkos, I think he loves it. Now, I do think that Jeff Vinnick has been an amazing owner since he's taken over for Tampa, and those guys have done a lot right. But I think there's been enough chinks in the armor along the way for different things that have happened with Stammer down there that some of that may be tugging on him and pushing him to go to free agency. I obviously don't think he's going to sign now. I think he would have been signed.
Yeah,
right
I do
now.
Too.
So I've concluded he's going to go to free agency, but I haven't completely ruled out that he won't go back to Tampa. But I am thinking that it is a low probability in my mind.
Yeah,
I don't know that from anything else other than you're asking me off the cuff.
Yeah, but I think it's Brian, it's financial. I don't think it's about not wanting to play in Tampa or not liking the community or whatever. I've talked to him and the only sense I got from him, and this is off air, was that he really likes Tampa. He likes right. being there. He likes living there essentially during the hockey season. There's nothing about it that dissuades him. He never gave me the indication he missed Toronto or would rather be in New York or a big market or whatever. This is just a circumstance that has come up, and now he has a decision to make. And if Tampa doesn't come up with the kind of money he gets offered elsewhere, he will go, but I don't think he's going to run out of town saying yippee-ki-yay. He likes it there.
I agree with that in the context that $8.5 million seems like, in comparison to the rest of the elite players in the National Hockey League that have signed recently.
Yeah, it is.
We'll throw Sid out. It seems like a little bit of a lowball offer. And if that's all it is, then I agree with you 100%. But somehow I believe, knowing Jeff Vinnick, that if it's $9.5 million, even $10 million to get him signed,
he'll find it.
That they would still do it. They'll find it. You can find it for Steven Stamkos, and he deserves it.
We'll watch with great interest. Good to hear your voice, Brian. Hope to see you soon. Thanks, pal.
Always a pleasure, Bob. Thank you.
Brian Lawton of the NHL Network, the former general manager of the Tampa Bay Lightning, interestingly enough. The UBC Thunderbirds baseball team has been pretty successful, not just in terms of wins and losses, but maybe more importantly, because it is what it is, it's a place to develop, in producing talent for Major League Baseball. We'll talk to the director of baseball at UBC, Terry McCaig, when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Minutes before the hour, Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks. McCowan Madani in our Toronto studios.
Love hearing some hip.
It's a one of the little secrets of, I don't know how big a secret it is, but in this country that there is, that like basketball, we've seen over the last few years the emergence of young Canadian basketball players. And we've watched it, and we've targeted it, and we've talked about it. And the difference, of course, between basketball and baseball is that you get drafted, and then you go to you play high school basketball, then you go to college for 1 year, then you get drafted, and all of a sudden you're in the NBA. It's real quick.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to assess that process very clairvoyantly. Baseball's another animal. The vast majority of baseball players, even those that come out of college, are going to spend 2, 3, 5, 6 years in the minor leagues before you get a chance to assess what their skill set is. But there is one place in this country that is churning out baseball talent at a fair clip. Terry McCaig is the director of baseball at the University of British Columbia, or UBC more specifically, and the Thunderbirds have, in 19 years, had 24 players drafted into the majors, including 3 this year, plus 1 undrafted free agent. And Terry joins us now. Hello, Terry. How are you?
Good. How about yourself, gentlemen?
We're great. Yeah, okay,
thanks for having me on. I'm as a baseball guy in Vancouver. I don't think our local media here covers baseball or the Jays enough, so I find myself tuning into the station and the show to get my baseball fix.
Well, we're glad you do. We thank you for that. What's your trick? What's your secret?
I think just, to be honest with you, it's just creating a culture. I mean, it's been 19 years, but at the same time, if you could imagine how difficult it was to start a college baseball program in Canada, which the first 8 to 10 years, you were just fighting the perception that there isn't college baseball in Canada. It can't work. The weather's too poor.
Right.
You name it. We
nobody to
it.
Play
and,
against.
And we kept slugging along. And you know, our most famous alum, Jeff Francis, came along early in our existence, and he really changed everything for us, because going 9th overall in 2002 in that first round, he showed that it didn't hurt him that he was at a Canadian university. He didn't have to be at UCLA. You know, you can play in the NAI, and that's the job of scouts. If you can play, they'll find you. And Jeff showed that. And from there, it got easier to recruit. And I think now we're kind of in a new era for our program with some new exciting facilities that we're building. And the success is starting to show on the field with even more draft picks.
Terry, how long did it take? Because in basketball, it took a couple of Canadians to go, namely that guy out in BC, Steve Nash, before everybody said, wait a minute, what's happening up there? Took a little while for football guys to come up here. Now they're traveling the country on the regular. How long did it take for your program to get recognized nationally where your phone's ringing and scouts are coming up?
Scouts have been coming up. They came out early because of Jeff Francis, and that changed everything. But to be honest with you, it's just in the last year that I think we've become a more of a national story where everybody is now really taking some notice. And I think it's just one of those things. Baseball, when you look at baseball in the country, it's gone in cycles. You know, in the early 90s, Blue Jay fever, and there's kids, more kids playing baseball than ever at the time. Then it kind of dips. And in the early 2000s, you know, there was Jeff Francis and Adam Loewen going to BC kids in the top 10 overall, right, the 2002 draft, and Joey Votto comes along, and you got Justin Morneau, and you kind of saw more excitement. And then it's tied to the Blue Jays. I mean, so just in the last year, you should see it out here in Vancouver, the number of kids, you know, you go out to ballparks or in our new building, our new training center that we're doing camps and clinics, the kids are wearing Blue Jay stuff everywhere. It's just, so we're on a big upswing in the last 12 months of baseball in Canada, just strictly because of the success of the Blue Jays. And we're hoping at UBC with the success, we just had a great year here this year. We went through some change with my new position and a new coaching staff, but then to turn out four pro guys in one year, it was a big year for us. And we have some momentum going with new facilities and stuff. So it's exciting.
Who do you recruit against when you're looking for players?
Strictly NCAA Division I schools. So we're obviously the only real option in Canada, and we're really big in Ontario. I'd say that 95%, 98% of our roster are Ontario and BC kids. And so we spend a lot of time out in Ontario, and we've had, those kids love it. They come out to Vancouver and the weather and the academics, obviously, at UBC, and they've loved it out there. But we're going up against the D1 schools, and you know, now we've become a real threat to them because we're going to chase the top Canadian kids. You got to be a student, of course, but if you do well in school, you know, we're going to chase after you hard. We have some money. You know, a lot of people don't understand the perception. They think a UBC CIS school, we play in the NAI, which is a four-year university college circuit in the U.S.
Right.
So the 250 schools, we fall under their rules from a scholarship point of view. So we can give out full rides. This year we gave out $150,000 in scholarship money, and under, I think the max could be 225, and I bet you in 2 or 3 years we'll be at our max. And you know, you start giving kids a $12,000 or $15,000 scholarship when the costs are only 18,000 Canadian for a year at UBC, you're going to get some top kids, and that's what we're starting to see.
Do you recruit in the U.S.?
No. You know what? We're the only, you know, I kind of call it official Canadian program, given that we play for a U.S. national championship.
Sure.
And that's always been our deal. We wear the Canadian flag on our hat, and we're proud of that. So we have had just a few Americans over the years. You know, you can't stop them from showing up and walk on tryout. And if they're pretty good, you know, we've had a few that have helped us out. But for the most part, our deal is to grab a bunch of Canadians and show, you know, playing a full U.S. schedule, just show them that, hey, we can play baseball, and we play it quite well. And it's kind of a national pride thing with the program.
Congratulations on your success. I hope you enjoy your new position as much as you did your old one. 18 years as the manager?
18 years. Traded in the uniform for a suit, but I'm enjoying the business side of baseball. Now, like I said, it's a unique time at UBC right now. You're coming off a Vanier Cup championship and a new athletic director coming in. We got him from Laval, Gilles Lapine, and what we're doing with the baseball programs. You know, you're starting to see some life in some Canadian universities that have been investing money into their sports programs, their own facilities, and it's an exciting time. We're excited about the future.
Happy to have you on. We wish you good luck, and hopefully we'll have a chance to chat down the road. Thanks,
yeah,
Terry.
Appreciate it, guys.
Terry McCaig, the director of baseball at UBC. Their number one draft choice of the three that were drafted this year was a fourth rounder, a right-handed pitcher named Curtis Taylor, who sadly for him was drafted by the Arizona Diamondbacks, and we'll have to look at those crappy uniforms.
You were sitting on that all night, weren't you?
Woe is him. Thank God they didn't draft me.
How about that today? Jim Brown.
Very cool. The greatest football player in the history of football. Our thanks to, JB from earlier, Cliff Floyd, Terry McCaig, and Brian Lawton this hour. Thanks to Arash. We'll be back tomorrow. Roundtable for your enjoyment. Hope you'll join us for that. Good night from Toronto.
Time is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.